I gotta put you on hold, Ms. Nash.
Gotcha.
Blog Talk Radio.
This one goes out to my little homie Brandon. Told you, I got you, my man.
A lot of pressure, man. Let's go, baby. Sophisticated gorillas is on the move tonight. VA, stand up. Come on. Come on. My man. 100 miles of running. With guns in our hand. Barbarian, heavy metal, carrying rock band. Investing in stock, man. Testing the clock, grand. My peeps got a spot on the block of our block, fam. A jar in the pot, man. Gets you a knot, man. Like ching ching. Hot damn. Cooked it like hot ham. Gotta be smart, man. Playing your part, man. Get your feelings apart. With ice over your heart, man. Hustling ain't a game. Hustling the art, man. 50% sour. 50% smart, man. And lame is turns.
Tuesday night. It's
10:05. You know what time it is. It's time to sound off. Sound Off Farms with your host, George Beverly. I hope y'all had a good day. I had a good day. Thank God. Some great things are happening in Wichita Falls. I just hope y'all are prayed up and ready to go, because when things hit the fan, whew, it's going to be beautiful. And I hope you're on the same train we're on. So let me go ahead and get my usual out the way. For rent, renter's rights. What you need to know before you sign a lease. It's happening today, already happened, and hopefully you was there from 4:30 to 6 o'clock p.m. Let's see here. The Hub is having, the Hub updates are having on March the 19th, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. It'll be last wills and testaments, the importance of having a will and the steps on preparing a will. On the 26th, early Head Start presentations, information on service for pregnant women and infants that we usually think are too young are ineligible for programs. Line and Learn on March 28th will be a budgeting class. That's March 28th. They'll be having a budgeting class. Also, there will be having a financial aid event for students and parents Thursday, February 26th. Mark your calendars. From 5 o'clock p.m. to 9 o'clock p.m. Come and go, and you do not need to be present to enter at that time. The Region 9 Education Service Center. That's a Region 9 Education Service Center off of 301 Loop 11, Wichita Falls. It's North Texas area, and United Way will be available for helping you file your taxes and help you also be able to file your FAFSA, which is a free application for federal student aid, and also the TAFSA, which is the Texas application for state federal aid. You need to bring your 2012 tax forms, if completed, or your W-2s forms, plus picture ID. There will be a freshman child care provided. If you have any questions, you can contact Kathy Hardy at 322-6928, extension 8217. That's 332-6928, extension 17. There are also free taxes prep. It says you don't have to pay your taxes filed. You earned it. Keep it. Schedule your appointment today. Dial 211. Free tax preparation for qualified individuals, for families with the incomes less than $51,000. For more information, visit ntauw.org. Or you can call the Hub with Ms. Josie Rodriguez at 115 East Wichita Street. Telephone number will be area code 940-687-2355. So we got one more thing. We got a couple more things. We have education, finance, and health. The four targets, one mission to take care. The four targets of areas for successful family and neighborhood development and education are education, income, employment, finances, and health. These are the areas that, when enhanced, have the most impact and opportunities for a thriving community. This is also at the Hub. The program coordinator is Diane Morgan. The address there at the Hub, once again, is 115 East Wichita Street. Wichita Falls, Texas. The number to contact her is area code 940-687-2355. Hours of operation is Monday through Friday, 8:30 a.m. through 5 o'clock p.m. Madeline Chappelle has a company called the Better Days Publishing. She does invitations, posters, programs, obituaries, magazines, flyers, business cards, etc. She's published the February issue for Better Days magazines. You can pick them up at Davenport, OB Shop, Sean's Beauty Plus, Trends, Barbershop, and you can also pick up a digital file by emailing her. And the email is havebetterdays@yahoo.com. That's havebetterdays@yahoo.com, all one word. If you like to call her, her telephone number is 940-923-4727. Now, if you'd like to get a hold of me, you can email me at soundoff97413, or you can get a hold of me at Facebook at Soundoff Forums, or also on Facebook you can get me at george.mango.904. If you'd like to Twitter, I need to do a class on Twitter because I ain't quite got that yet. So you can Twitter me at soundoff97413. If you'd like to call into the show tonight, because we have a phenomenal speaker, and I'll get to that in a second, but if you'd like to call in, please call in at area code 347-989-1014. And as we always do, we do it with Jesus in our hearts. So we'll be reading the King James Version, Ephesians 6:6-13. Not with eye service and man pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as the Lord and not to man, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do not do the same thing unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, fallen angels, against powers, fallen dark angels with power, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, fallen dark angels of this dark world, against spiritual wickedness in the higher places, spiritual wicked demon fallen angels, spirited angels, wicked in high places. Wherefore, take up ye the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand the evil of day, and having all to stand. And let the church say amen. All right, so let me introduce to you tonight. He is Wichita Falls' own Larry Nash. Mr. Nash, how you doing tonight?
Wonderful, wonderful. How you doing this evening?
I'm doing great. I'm blessed. Thank you, sir. So I'll go ahead and let you introduce yourself, and then you take it there from there.
Wonderful. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. When February rolls around, I always like to try and educate the masses on different history moments, talk about things that are taking place in our country that may not be as publicized as some of the bigger or more popular stories dealing with Black history. So let me say it's my pleasure to be able to share this moment with you. I am Larry Nash. I am a local guy from here, right here in Wichita Falls. Lived here all my life, and can honestly say I'm proud to call Wichita Falls my home. I've been here all my life. I'm currently raising my family here, and to be honest, I don't think there's a whole lot of other places I'd rather be. Today, I would like to speak with you guys about Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street was a community in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it takes place back in 1921. When we talk about 1921 in the history of our nation, if we think about it, you know, this is, you know, I'm 44 years old. My grandfather would have been right in the middle of this time period. So when we talk about history of our nation, we're not talking about hundreds of years ago. I mean, this is relatively modern history when you really get to thinking about it. Kind of to set the tone a little bit about where our nation was at this time, what was going on in our nation, set the mode a little bit. I'll go back and we'll talk about how the black settlers got to Oklahoma. It's an interesting story in itself. It was called a Trail of Tears, and this is when a lot of Native Indians and African Americans pretty much walked from all parts of the United States. A lot of them were from Mississippi. A lot of them were from the southern states. But it was called the Trail of Tears because so many people passed in trying to make it from whatever part of the nation that they were in, trying to make it to Oklahoma. At the time, Oklahoma was basically land that was there for the taking. It wasn't part of the Union at that time, so people could just, if they could just get there, they could claim a piece of land for themselves and make a home. So that's what newly freed slaves were trying to do. They were trying to get to a place to where they could call the land their own, work it, and just make a home for themselves. So taking this Trail of Tears, they lost a lot of people because they're basically walking across the nation. And if you think about these southern states, it's tough. The weather and the terrain, it was just tough. Hence the name Trail of Tears. But once a lot of the settlers made it to Tulsa, or made it to Oklahoma, they all migrated to Tulsa, and they began to create their own community in that area. This was about 1907, 1908, that time period. Within a 10, 15-year period, the African-American settlers had not only found themselves a home, they had made themselves some nice homes. Of course, during this period of time, racial tension was, if not at all-time high, it was right up there. So, you know, as these African-Americans began to build businesses, build homes and things of that nature, they still were not allowed to do business with the whites of the community. What this ended up doing was essentially helping these black communities learn to depend upon no one other than themselves. They couldn't do business with anybody else, so they had to do business with each other. This is why, in my belief, that the community grew as it did. All money stayed within the community. All money was spent on each other's business. Therefore, you continue to build that community, and they continue to build each other up. So at this time, you know, you're looking at 1915, 1920, in that time period, the African-American community was thriving. I mean, yeah, there was still a lot of things they couldn't do. You know, there was still a lot of, you know, they couldn't go into town, they couldn't go into movie theaters, and but they had everything they needed within their own community. So it was, it was almost a blessing in disguise, because it made all of them work with each other. Back to the nation and where we are as a nation at this time. About 1915, it was said that our nation did not have very many. Back in the 1800s, the Klan, Ku Klux Klan, was very popular here in the South. They were very vocal. They were a very nasty group. They believed in violence and scare tactics. They believed in murder, hanging, lynchings, whatever they had to do to get their points across, to run anybody and control anybody who wasn't what they considered pretty right. And from time to time, they would even go as far as to kill pretty white people that did not agree with their methods. So, I mean, the Klan was the epitome of a terrorist group right here on our own soil. Early 1900s, a lot of the Klan members, or card-carrying Klan members, you know, kind of went away. You know, you saw a lot of the activity die down. It wasn't nearly as many racial crimes being committed just through that time period. And, you know, things in our nation were starting to change a little bit for the better. 1915 comes Birth of a Nation. Now, this movie has been credited with bringing the Klan back on its feet. This movie is what incited a lot of, let's say, fence riders to decide to go ahead and become card-carrying Klansmen again. So, you know, this takes place in 1950. What ensues after that is racial tension becomes very prevalent once again. Hangings and murders and things of that nature of black men, it spiked once again. Now, I must remind you at this point that in this time period, Klansmen or any white Americans who chose to commit crimes, even murder, were not breaking any laws. During this time period, it was not against the law for a white man to kill a black man. So a lot of the things that they did, they could hide behind the law, and even though it was morally wrong, they could still say, well, legally, I did no wrong. So when there is a law saying that it's okay to kill another human being, that really gives that person who is allowed to be killed, I would say that puts them at a disadvantage in that country. But back to where we were as far as the attitude of the nation. Nationwide, we had a lot of soldiers returning from the war. And what a lot of soldiers were finding is that as they came home from the war, there were no jobs. What a lot of soldiers were finding as they came home from the war, socially, things had began to change. In that short period of time that they were gone, blacks had become more prominent in a lot of the communities. That short period of time when they were gone, women began to have more of a say-so in what was going on. So as a white man who left home to fight a war, you left your home, women had no say-so, and black people had no rights. For you to go and fight a war and then come home, and now you have women who are wanting to be heard, and you have blacks who are actually developing communities and being prominent members of society. And then on top of that, you can't find a job. Needless to say, they were not happy with where our nation was going. So as they start coming home, and as the movie Birth of the Nation was playing all over the country, what you started to see was a spike in the memberships of Klansmen all over the nation. This led up to what historians call the Red Summer. This took place in 1919. 1919, from May through August, there was 38 cities that had race riots. You had cities in Arizona all the way to New York and obviously in Texas. These race riots took place all over the nation in a three-month period. All of them started with an individual altercation, which led to essentially black citizens' property being destroyed, stolen, burned, and what have you. 38 cities over three, four month span, properties destroyed, properties looted, people killed, people hung, people murdered, and mostly African Americans. In these riots, there were some white Americans killed, but I think the numbers were 4-1, African American versus white Americans. So, meanwhile, while this is going on all over the nation, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street, and let me just add that it was given the name Black Wall Street because of its prominence and the people who lived there. How wealthy they were. It was also nicknamed Little Africa by some of the local Oklahomians. And but the name comes from the wealth that the African Americans had obtained and was continued to obtain at that time. Meanwhile, all over the nation, race riots. Martial law here, martial law there. I mean, we were basically using the people who had come home from the war and sending them into all these different cities, and government was declaring martial law in a lot of these different places. But through all this, Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma, was still thriving. They had not had any trouble with race riots thus far. and everything was basically business as usual. Then we get to 1921, May 31st. We have a young African American who was a shoeshine boy downtown Tulsa, Oklahoma. During his day, he had to go use the restroom at some point because this was something that he had done every day. This was his job. The people knew him, and he had been granted permission to take the elevator and use the restroom whenever he needed. Like I said, the townspeople knew him. Good kid, no problems. Well, this one day, he gets on the elevator, and the stories are that as the elevator took off, it jerked. Once the elevator jerked, it jerked him. He lost his balance, and at that point, he brushed against the white lady who was the elevator operator at the time. Once he brushed against the white lady, she then reported that the young man tried to rape her. Like I said, this is a young man that everybody knows, so it wasn't hard to find. They go and get him. They go and arrest him. Obviously, he is denying that what she said happened. He's telling his side of the story. At that time period, needless to say, they're looking for any reason to kill the race relations. Now, Black Wall Street, like I said, was one of the most prosperous neighborhoods, not only in the South, but in the entire nation. The people of Black Wall Street had accumulated wealth like nowhere else. It was said that the people in that community, there were four or five citizens who had planes. This was back in 1921. They said they had one guy who had a potato farm to where when he pulled his crops, he had enough potatoes to fill up five trains. That's a lot of potatoes. You had doctors. You had musicians. You had school teachers. Within their community, they had three schools. Within their community, they had two hospitals. Within their community, they had their own movie theaters. So going back to when we were saying that, they kept the money within the community. Over a period of time, they built everything that they needed. Six grocery stores, countless restaurants, countless clothing stores, cleaners, anything that one community would need, they had to. Any one thing that any community would need, they had to. And the money never left the community. As they sold products, as they built their wealth. They brought that wealth back, and that wealth just stayed there and continued to grow and grow and grow. So with that said, a lot of these black entrepreneurs, wealthy entrepreneurs, still were not allowed to leave and do business with the white people in the community. Segregation, obviously, is at an all-time high. Jim Crow laws had been abolished, but although the law had been abolished, the sentiment was still the same. What you had is a lot of times you had the whites of the community who were not doing so good. And like in a lot of African-American communities nowadays, there was a railroad track that pretty much separated the two communities. It was said that a lot of times the whites of the community would drive over to the railroad tracks and just sit back and watch the African-Americans live their daily lives. And the better the African-Americans did, you know, the more upset a lot of the local whites got. You know, why these black people have all these nice things and we don't and we're struggling was the sentiment. And so, you know, that just festered over time. The better that the blacks did and the worse that the whites did, the more animosity that built up. And you know, that's just, you know, part of that is just being the time period of our nation. But back to the young man in the elevator. He was arrested, and he was taken into custody. And the newspaper that evening wrote the story about that incident. And you know, this took place the incident took place early that morning. By the evening time, when the newspaper came out, it had already the headline already said that there's going to be a lynching tonight. Well, you know, you have a lot of wealthy, prominent black people in the community that, because they have accumulated some wealth, and in their eyes, they've accumulated some clout also. So, you know, this was one of those situations where the blacks of the community got together and decided that they were not going to stand by and watch this young man be hanged for something that they know that he did not do. So what you had at that point, you had a lot of the African-American men. They got together, and they got their guns, and they walked down to the sheriff's office where the young man was being held. Unbeknownst to them, while the blacks had organized and went down to try and protect this young man, the whites were organizing because they were hell-bent on it being a hanging. What you had was about 80 armed black men going down to the courthouse to, like I said, protect this young man. You had about 500 armed white men that was hell-bent on what they called justice, meaning hanging this young black man. As the night grew, as time grew longer, more white people showed up. By the time the riot started, it was said to have had over 3,000 white people, Klansmen, there in Tulsa, ready to riot. So at this point, the black men went down to the courthouse. The white men also went down to the courthouse. One of the white men went to one of the black men and told him to disarm himself. The black gentleman said no. Shots were fired, and the riot began. At this point, the city officials of Tulsa cut off all communications to any agency outside of Tulsa. Cut all phone lines and make sure that there was no way to get information in or out. As shots were fired and the first African-American was killed there in the middle of the street, the ambulance workers attempted to get to him to try and revive him. At that point, the mob turned on the ambulance, and from that point on, there was not going to be any help for any of the African-Americans. What ensued was simply this. The Klansmen, and I say Klansmen, all of them may not have been Klansmen, but the majority of them were. So the Klansmen then stole the planes that belonged to the African-Americans, began to fly over the community, dropping anything that they could to start a fire. They burnt every home, every business, and the amount of people that were killed varies. The Tulsa official count of deaths was 36. The United Way that was there working, trying to help the citizens, reported at least 600 deaths. So, I mean, obviously the reports vary, and you can believe what you want at that point. But it was told that a lot of the bodies were burnt, thrown in the rivers, and so you know there will never be an accurate count. At that point, you believe what you want as far as the numbers. I happen to believe that it had to be several hundred people. But anyway, that is what got the riot started. Once the riot started, all communication outside of Tulsa was cut off. The people began to loot, kill, and murder at will. They were going from house to house, taking the property. And remember, this is one of the wealthiest neighborhoods in the nation, black or white. So these whites were going from house to house, taking property, looting, taking clothes, taking jewelry, taking anything of value, taking cars, shooting anybody that they saw alive, and taking their property. Now, they were going systematically throughout the neighborhood. They would go through a house, take what they wanted, burn it down. Next house, take what they wanted, burn it down. You had a vehicle outside, it no longer belonged to you. It belonged to whichever clan even jumped in it first. And, you know, of course, with this being 1921, there's a lot of people who were involved in this that are still living. So you can get some pretty accurate accounts of what was happening and how it took place just by listening to some of the survivors. And, you know, obviously some of the comments that were being made is, hey, these niggers got more nicer stuff than I've ever had. You know, it's just a lot of venom. Obviously, to come through and take a man's property, burn the house down, I mean, obviously, that kind of speaks for itself. One of the gentlemen, one of the more popular stories was that there was a young man who had served in the Army, black war veteran, who had come home. And this was the early stages of the riot. He saw what was going on or what was starting to happen. He went inside his home and he put his military uniform on and came out and stood in front of his house, thinking that once they see that I am a American soldier, they will pass by and let him be. He put his uniform on, went out in front of his house, stood at attention, and they shot him in the head. When people saw that, they knew it was time to get out because there was no law anymore. It was total chaos. All of the property was taken. All of the homes were burned. All of the businesses, and not just businesses burned, but whatever that business was. If that was a grocery store, they took all of the food. You know, if it was a doctor's office, they burned all the medicine. So whatever business it was, this was their livelihood. This was the community members' livelihood, and that was just totally destroyed. All of this took place in a 12-hour period. They systematically came in, destroyed an entire neighborhood in 12 hours. The people of that community that lost their property never received any compensation, and I hear stories like this, and I always hear people come into the United States, and the one rap that a lot of foreigners like to put on the shoulders of African Americans is that, hey, you know, you guys live in this country and you guys have all these opportunities and you don't take advantage of them. You know, you're lazy and you just won't sit back and live off entitlements. Yeah, I hear that a lot. And I don't think people understand that when you think about not so long ago, you had African Americans prospering all over the nation. I mean, I don't know if you can fathom, but 38 riots in one summer, destroying African-American businesses all over the nation. In a 12-hour period, destroying one of the most prosperous neighborhoods in the whole nation. You know, African-Americans had pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, and African-Americans were making it work. And systematically throughout the nation, it was taken. And there was no compensation. Now, I know a lot of people look at the Jewish community and they say, yeah, you know, well, the Jewish went through the Holocaust. And, you know, they have pulled themselves up by the boot. And you know what? That is true. But the Jewish community did not do that in Germany. The Jewish community left Germany and did it in the United States for the most part. You're talking about a group of people who are still in the same place in which they were persecuted, still living under the thumb of the persecutors. And I think where we have come as African Americans is quite remarkable when you think about what all has taken place throughout our history. Yeah, there are some things that could be done differently. There are some things that we probably don't do so well. But my goodness, when you look at situations like this, it's amazing that we are as resilient as we are. It's amazing that we are still standing, still fighting, and still overcoming. But like I said, all of the properties looted, destroyed, and burned, they were basically taking guns and just using black people as target practice. When blacks realized that, you know, their friends and family members and community members were all being slaughtered, they began to grab whatever they could, and they started running for the hills. Well, it said that a lot of these Klan members were waiting, and the women and children, as they ran for the hills, they were just using them as target practice. You know, once again, you got to remember at this point, to kill a black man, it's not against the law. So they're not doing anything illegal at this point, which still blows my mind. But the amount of people that were slaughtered and the amount of people who lost personal property, that'll never be. We will never know the true numbers. What we do know, it is probably the most horrific 12 hours in African American history, as far as being citizens here in the United States. As far as I'm concerned, there isn't a single event in the United States history that's probably that's worse than what took place that evening on Black Wall Street. If you look at the 38 cities in 1919, if you look at Black Wall Street, if you look at all of the property loss, all of the death, you know, I hate to use words like Holocaust, because what happened to the Jews was truly horrific. Truly horrific. But, I mean, it's the closest word that I can think of to describe what took place to African Americans in that time period. Now, speaking of the Holocaust and speaking of what took place in Germany, the Jewish community had accumulated lots of wealth over in Germany. The Germans were envious of the wealth. Well, let me rephrase that. Hitler and his regime was envious of the wealth that the Jews had accumulated. The whites were envious of the wealth that the blacks had accumulated. The Jews were persecuted, killed. The Holocaust ensued. Red Summer, Black Wall Street, all ensued. So, as far as I'm concerned, there's a lot of correlation to what took place in Germany to what took place in the United States. A black Holocaust is what I see it as being. It was not illegal to kill, rob, and steal, just like it was not illegal to kill, rob, and steal from the Jews. So that's where I draw the correlation, and that's where I get the name Black Holocaust. The African-American women were killed. African-American children were killed. African-American men were slaughtered. Like I say, several hundred, all in a matter of hours. And the amount of wealth that was stolen is untold. You had schools, you had hospitals, you had grocery stores, you had everything within that community that a community needed to thrive and prosper. You had nightclubs. You had restaurants. All taken away in a matter of 12 hours and never to be replaced. So, at this point, if there's any questions or anything that someone may want to ask.
Okay, I had a caller calling in, and so I'm calling the caller, get it back online, he or she back online, and see if they have the question now.
Okay. Hello.
Hello.
What's going on, George? This is Kingston, man. I was calling to find out could I get through to you on through a phone, or you have to have a laptop.
Actually, you're on the show right now, so.
I was trying to listen to you, man, but I couldn't. My laptop was down, so I was trying to see could I do it from my phone.
Yeah, you could do it on. You can go to blogtalkradio.com.
Yeah. I see you talking Black Wall Street tonight, huh?
Yes, sir. Did you get to listen to it?
I was trying, man. I couldn't really get through with my phone. I'm gonna try again, though.
Okay. Yeah. Just go through your webpage.
All right. All right, man.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir.
All right. Bye bye. I guess he was just trying to get. I guess he was trying to get through. I got a couple questions for you, and
okay.
I know the story, and I know some of my listeners probably don't. I appreciate in detail how you went back, explained the backstory to explain the story itself. That's what I kind of do myself. My question is what do you think the mindset of the predominant wealthy blacks in that community, how did they think they actually stood outside of their community as far as social, economic, and political?
Well, because, you know, on Black Wall Street, you very well could have been a millionaire. But if you walk downtown, you still had to bow down to a 9-year-old white boy. So
okay.
There was no question where they stood social. They still had to remain in their place. When you talk about socially, there were still restaurants that they could not enter. There were still restrooms, and there were still all those things were still in effect outside of Black Wall Street. Now, this is the thing that may have led them to believe that the wealth that they had accumulated may have came with clout. They did not have to leave Black Wall Street. And some of those guys never had to leave. So what they accumulated in the clout that they had within their own community, it would have been easy for them to believe that was translated outside of the community. But because they were not leaving the community, they may have lost a couple of them may have lost the fact that they were still black people in America.
At that point, do you think that they knew? I want to ask quite carefully. Do you think that the blacks in that community, do you actually think that they felt like they were equal to maybe somebody across tracks?
Well, like I said, they had to have known that they were not. There was a ritual that took place, a monthly ritual where it was called the Klan Parade, and you would have thousands of Klan members meet in Tulsa have a parade, and they said that these, there were so many Klansmen that it, for all of them to walk through, it took several hours. This is how many Klansmen that participated in these monthly parades. Now, with these monthly parades, the blacks of that community knew on those evenings they better be in their houses and they better be away from any of those drunk Klansmen, because they also like to practice what they call and also it's believed to be where the word picnic came from. But they like to practice what they call picnic. And what they would do is they get drunk, and if they saw a black person walking around, they'd pick them and they'd hang them.
Right, right, right. So, I talked about that last night on my show.
So, I mean, with this taking place, obviously any black person with any sense knew that they were not equal. They were not perceived to be equal. And at the same token, you could be killed, and there would be no law book. So they had to know that they were not equal. But now, like
could
I said, once you accumulate, so you know, money sometimes goes. Money sometimes changes people. And I could see where some of the more affluent blacks may felt as if that money also brought a little clout. And I could see where they may have been confused, but for the majority, I'd have to say that they knew their place.
So, can I ask you a question? What is that? What is the term where black people had to be in before dark? It's a term that's used in the black community. I can't think of it, but they had to be in the house before dark, because they knew that if they were caught after dark, it's a possibility that they could get, you know, picked up and hung and lynched and all that stuff. And I can't think off the top of my head.
Well, I mean, it was common knowledge that, you know, the whites went out and sought black. A sport. I mean, to go out and find a black kingdom, I mean, that was just, you know, some of us, when we don't have anything to do on weekends, we go shoot pool. Back then, when these guys didn't have anything to do on weekends, they'd go find blacks and hang them. So, I mean, that's why I say, you know, that the African American community knew where they stood for the most part. Outside of Black Wall Street.
Okay, so now I'm about to ask you some. I try not to get too controversial, and you don't have to answer the question if you don't want to. The question that I have is do you believe, I'm going to only speak for this situation, do you believe that the people of Tulsa that were in the Black Wall Street street incident, do you think that those persons and generations of those persons should be paid back reparations?
Of course, that's the American way. if you destroy somebody's property, it's called restitution.
Yes.
Even if you destroy somebody's property and go to jail, you still pay restitution. So, I mean, to me, it's part of my belief that this was a calculated effort by more than just the Klansmen of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I mean,
right,
if you look
right.
at what took place, this wasn't just an isolated incident. This was something that took place nationwide. And,
correct.
And in my opinion, I just don't believe that all of a sudden race riots just magically appeared. I just don't. So But to answer your question, yeah, I do believe restitution. I think anytime anybody's property is destroyed, whoever destroyed it, for whatever reason, should have to pay restitution.
And now I'm going to talk about the future. I'm talking about present day. What can African American older men in their early 40s, late 50s or 60s do to try to educate the younger men, like in their 30s and in their early 20s? That way we can pass it down to the younger generation as far as historical value, like stories like this.
In any culture, it's always up to your older generation to pass down your history. Indians didn't have books, but they passed down their history. They passed down their beliefs. They passed down their laws.
We've been talking about this all month, and it's important or imperative that people understand what's really going on. So I'll say this to all my listeners. If you are not black, or if you are African American or black, and you want to know more, the school system's not going to teach you. We know this. You've got to do the work yourself. If you're going to read a book, how about reading?
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 9406136688 is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. We did not get your message either because you were not speaking or because of a bad connection. To disconnect, press 1. To record your message, press 2. Are you still there? To disconnect, press 1. To record your message, press 2. Are you still there? To disconnect, press 1. To record your message, press 2. Sorry you were having trouble. Please try again later. Goodbye.
Hello, can y'all hear me? Can y'all hear me now? Hello, can y'all hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. Hello, can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Hello? Hello, what's going on? Can y'all hear me? Hello, can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? Test 1 2 1 2, test test. Okay, last time that happened, I was still recording, so I'm just going to go with this. And I know you can't hear me, and I apologize. We're having some technical difficulties. I'm just going to continue to go on. I apologize. You can't hear me, but still live, okay? So if you want to go ahead and leave the room, that's fine. I'm going to try to get Sinash back on the line here, so we talked to him, and I do not know if it's going to work, because I can't even hear on the radio. Hello?
Hello?
Mr. Nash?
Huh?
Mr. Nash?
No.
No, okay. I was looking for Mr. Nash.
This is not Mr. Nash. Who is this?
Okay, thank you. George Everly. All right, thank you very much, sir.
Yeah.
All right, well, that was not Mr. Nash, so I will continue on with the show. it is we're definitely having a difficult night tonight, but that's all right. I wish I could get him back on the line. He dropped a lot of information for us, and I would like to thank him. I know he's not on right now. But I'd like to thank him for doing a wonderful job at putting through the information. So I'm going to continue on that, and see exactly how we can piece this part together. Now, Mr. Nash pointed out that not only did the Tulsa riot hit, but several cities around the country was hit. And people always say, well, you can't put all that stuff together. Well, that's what they want you to think, ladies and gentlemen. That's what they want you to think. I know I brought up this before, but I'm going to actually share it with you, ladies and gentlemen, because it is important. It's important that you understand the type of evilness and sorcery that we're dealing with. Okay, this is called Tuskegee Syphilis Experiment. The Tuskegee Syphilis Experiment was an infamous clinical study conducted between 1932. And 1972. Did you say that, George? 3 years. They did a study 40 years, ladies and gentlemen, in Tuskegee, Alabama, the United States Public Health Service, to study the nature, progression of the untreated syphilis in rural black men by who thought they were receiving free health care from the United States government. Let me read this to you again, because some of y'all won't get it. The Tuskegee syphilis experiment was an infamous clinical study conducted between 1932 and 1972 in Tuskegee, Alabama, by the United States Health Service to study the natural progression of untreated syphilis in the rural black men who thought they were getting and receiving free health care from the United States government. And guess what you're getting for free? Huh? When the government starts giving out free flu shots at Walgreens, I'm not going to say nothing. The Public Health Service worked with the Tuskegee Institution between the began with the study in 1932. Investigators enrolled in the study a total of 600 impoverished sharecroppers of Macon County, Alabama. 399 had previous cases of syphilis before the study began, and 201 without the disease. So what does that mean, ladies and gentlemen? 201 didn't have disease prior to that. They gave it to them without the knowledge. For particularly in the study, the men were given free medical meals, free burial insurance. They were never told they had syphilis, nor were they ever treated for it, according to the Center for Disease and Control. The men were told that they were being treated for bad blood, a local term for various illnesses that include syphilis, amnesia, and fatigue. The 40-year study was controversial for reasons related to the ethnical studies, primarily because the search knowingly failed treatments appropriately after the 1940s, validating that penicillin as an effort to cure the disease that they were studying. Revelations of the study failure by whistleblowers led to major change in the U.S. law and regulations of protecting a particular in clinical studies. Now studies require information counsel. U.S. federal agency will keep up with the secrets of executive order. By 1947, penicillin had become the standard treatment for syphilis. Choice available to the doctors, including the study, might have included treating all the syphilic studies and closing the study, or splitting off the control group with testing the penicillin. Instead, the Tuskegee scientists continued the study without treating any patient and withholding the penicillin information about it from the patients. In addition, scientists prevented participation from access to penicillin treatment programs available in other areas. The study continued to for numerous U.S. public service supervisors until 1972. 1972, people, I wasn't even born yet, but I was born in 77. That was 5 years before I was born when they stopped this. I want you to do your research, and you, when black people say that they are trying to kill us, I am telling you, people, I'm not making this stuff up. And the reason I'm not making this up is because I know the truth. You may say, George, you're just looking into stuff, and you're always trying to find something that sounds controversial. Look, if the United States released these documents for the public, I'm only getting what they're showing me. You have the same access as I do. I don't have no secret treasure box. I don't have no secret sources. You got the same computer I got, maybe a little faster or slower, but you got Google. You can look up stuff just as well as I can. So don't discredit me because you're too lazy to look for it. And then when you look at it, you don't understand it. So then when you don't understand it, you say, I'm making it up. All I'm trying to do, people, is let you know what's the real deal and what's the truth. And the truth is, they're not only trying to kill the black race, we're trying to kill the human race. And you say, George, how dare you say things like that? Well, okay, let me put it this way. Okay? Let me put it this way. What is there's a document that started to surface in the mid 70s and 80s. Those people who were in office at those times, they know who they are. You know who they are. Maybe not the younger generation, but they definitely know who they are. Okay. Before I get to that, I want to go ahead and tell you the institutions who were involved in this. Okay. This was an infamous biomedical research study in United States history. It's the Office of Human Resources Protection, OHRP. It also led to federal laws and regulations requiring institutional review boards. All right? And it was also conducted by the United States Department of Health Services, HHS. Now, I told y'all what happened, right? With this, by the 1940s, doctors and hospitals and public health centers throughout the country routinely checked diagnosis of syphilis with penicillin, right? In the period following the World War II, the relation of the Holocaust and the related Nazi medical abuse brought about change in the international law. The Western allies formulated the Nuremberg Code, the code to the right to research studies. No one appeared to have revised the protocol to the Tuskegee study according to the new standards. Okay? Now, you say, George, how can this be true? How can this be true? You want me to tell you how it's true? I'm about to tell you. It says aftermath. Hello. Let me look at it real quick. Let me go. As a part of the settlement of the class act lawsuit subsequently filed by NAACP, the United States government paid $9 million unjustly for inflation and agreed to pay free medical treatment for the surviving patients and surviving family members infested with the consequences of the study. In 1974, Congress passed the Natural Research Act and created a commission to study and the right of the written governing the study involving human participation. On May 16th, 1997, President Bill Clinton formally apologized and held a ceremony for the Tuskegee study patients. What was done cannot be undone, but we can end the silence. We can stop turning our heads away. We can look at you in the eye and finally say on the behalf of American people that the United States do not want selfish, or I am ashamed to our black American citizens. I'm sorry that our federal government orchestrated a study so clearly racist. Five of the eight remaining study survivors attended the White House celebration. Do you not understand this, people? Do you know AIDS and the HIV virus was created in the laboratory. When I grew up, they told me that's the, what they told the public was an African monkey carried the disease, gave it to an African, and an African so happened to give it to somebody in the United States. Why are we blaming black folks? Why are we blaming Mexicans? Swine flu. Why are we blaming the Chinese with SARS? There's nothing out the European world that ever comes out that's dangerous. The last time something dangerous came out of that European area was the Black Plague. But everything else, everything's a minority thing. Now, when there's an outbreak, the outbreaks happen in Texas, New York, Florida, and California. Why? Okay, you can say, of course, they're big states. Well, California and Texas are. New York is not that big, especially if you talk about the boroughs. Florida's not that big. So what are we talking about? We're talking about we have been manipulated to think that we need to cause a stir in the media. The media causes a panic, and you've got all these people telling you to buy masks and gloves and wash your hands. You know, okay, I don't disagree you should wash your hands, but at some times you have to have some bacteria on your hands to fight off the bad bacteria. If you continue to take all those things off, your immune system won't be able to function. How do you know this, George? How about you pick up one of those Reader's Digest? How about you pick up one of those health ads about AIDS and what it does to your immune system? What about obsessive compulsive disorder, ADD, ADHD, all that stuff? Did you know when we grew up? I'm 35. Did you know when we grew up? There was lead in everything. There was lead in our homes, lead in our water. There was mercury in our water and in our food. We've been eating mercury. We've been eating tuna forever. But now they said there's high concentration of mercury. So are we getting fish who has a high content of mercury, or do we have mercury already in our waters that the fish eat from their prey? I'm confused. But what I'm saying is if you don't think that the United States government does something crooked every now and again, then you are a fool. And I will call you a fool to your face, because there's evidence every day come out about things that happen that they sip and say, or they make a mistake, somebody prints out a document, or there's a whistleblower. And thank God the Whistleblower Act. We need more of those people, because we don't know what's going on. The only thing we do know is that it's existing. Do you know that let's see. Do you know that? Excuse me, I apologize. Do you know that the things that are going on in our society are being covered up because we turn our eyes to it? Look, I talk this way because sometimes you need to be talked this way. And I sit there and I listen to my elder give a historical thing. And let me tell you, if it does not bother you to your core, no matter what race you are, then shame on you. Because if you hadn't heard what he said, the word picnic, they think comes from the word pick a nigger. And they would have what they call picnics, and they would find a black, and they would hang him, and they would have a picnic while the black man was hanging. I love the human race. I love my people that God has created. But we cannot no longer sit by and let these things happen to us. Okay? Because it's not about your education. Yeah, you can be educated. That's good. But education only gives you so much power. As you could see with the black, the listen, you can be a black man and you can be, like Obama, for example. He is probably one of the smartest Negroes on the planet. He can spit your drawers off like Luther. He is very intelligent. He has got it together, but there's still people who don't like him because of the color of his skin. Now, what sense does that make, people? This is 2013. If you don't think overt racism or convert racism is in the house, it is. It's an institutional thing. If you don't think white privilege is a thing, it's real. But I want to say this to my brothers and sisters in a minority, okay? No matter what level you get behind your name, no matter how far you rise in society, you are still whatever racial epithet that you're known by. Because when the doors close and you're not around, best believe there's been some really nasty things about you or black race. Now, is that everybody? No. No. But if you are the person in the room and you are a good person and you do have the spirits of the fruit and you claim to be Christian, then you need to stand and say, sir, I don't think so. Senator, I don't think so. I don't want to hear that in my presence. Representative, I don't want to hear that in my presence. Governor, please hold your tongue on that. That's not right. You shouldn't treat or think that way. What's wrong with us? We become pussycats because we want to go with flow. You know what? It's easy to go with the flow. It's hard to stand for what's right. And I said this last night. If you see a man about to stab a baby, we're talking about a beautiful little baby, about 5 weeks old, and he's about to stab and kill him in the middle of the town. And people walking, are you think people going to let that man just kill that baby? Let me ask you this question. What happened to my brother Trayvon Martin? He was in the neighborhood at night, and they would not open their mind to see who was screaming. People, we got to stop being cowards. The reason why I speak with authority, because God gave me to speak with authority. Secondly, he saved me from dying in Iraq. So I've been activated in this point in time in order to say what he wants me to say. Did I cheat death? No. I listened to his divine word that day. So when you talk about fear, if you've never been in combat and lost somebody in combat, and you had to go pick up the brain matter, or you had to pick up their body parts, don't talk to me about fear. Don't talk about suffering. Don't talk about being patient. Don't talk about anger, because you have never experienced that. I have. So from my point of view, I'm going to stand. There is no point in life if I don't. Why did God save me if I'm going to just go with the motion? My brother Charles told me this, and I love the quote that he said. He said, Martin Luther King, if you're 30 and you hadn't gotten involved in something in your life as far as civil rights, then you should be dead. That's a statement that Martin Luther King said. And you know why? Because there's too many house niggers. There's too many people black people who got the Willie Lynch mentality. There's too many Hispanics who got the Willie Lynch mentality. We are the most predominant race in the United States of America, but we are the most oppressed. Why? Because we still would be American. What does American mean? American means believing in the rights that we have. We can do that, but we will never be equal. We must be happy in our own culture of who we are. We're African first. We're Mexican first, or Puerto Rican first, or Spaniard first, or South American, or Panamanian first. I consider myself American because I have an American citizenship. So don't take me wrong, because I love the Constitution. I love the Bill of Rights. If you had heard my show before, you need to listen to my shows. I have read the Constitution. I have read the preamble. I have read the Declaration of Independence on my show, and I know what they mean and what they stand for. So this is my perspective. So I say to my fellow man, it's okay to be American. But when you get to the point where you want to be white and assimilate because that's what we know to do, you're wrong. Why am I saying this? I'm saying this is because we should not have to talk a certain way around white people. We should be able to speak if we want to in slang in a business forum. Okay, let me ask you another question. What's the purpose of uniforms? Everybody has uniforms. What's the purpose of a uniform? Everybody can identify that you work for a company. Usually it's a policy in order for you to be clean and to identify who you are. So in that text, they say, okay, well, you can only wear your hair this long, or you could got to do this. Let me tell you this, okay? Why can't black people grow out their hair? Why can't black people have afros? Because they think, I won't get hired if I have an afro. I got to be clean shaven, high and tight, in order to make it. And everybody who knows me knows that I love people. They know that I love all people. And I'm not saying that white people are bad. What I'm saying is there's a difference between being black and Hispanic and acting black and Hispanic. If you want to live in the white world because you're married to a white woman, hell, I'm married to a white woman. That's okay. But once again, you must not do what your father and your mother did and tell you not to learn Spanish. Let me tell you this, that when I was in Oregon, I had a young soldier who told me that his parents said they wanted a better life for him, so they didn't teach him Spanish. He's got a girlfriend or a fiance at that time, and when he went to her, they lied and said that he was Native American. But the dude was Mexican. So if you got to lie about who you are, then you are a liar to yourself. You don't know who you are. You're lost. And some people may not like my message, but it's time out for being cowards. A whole city was burned down because of one incident. When was the last time, besides the L.A. riots, that black people burned? And by the way, black people did not burn down their own places. They burned down industries are places they deem to be a threat to the African-American community. When the riots started to spill closer to closer to Beverly Hills, that's when they started sending the National Guard because white people were afraid. Black people have never rebelled at a large scale. You have never heard of a rebellion of black people in the United States going around killing black folks, even after we were released free. You ain't never heard black people rolling down the street did shoot white folk. You ain't never heard about Mexicans rolling down the street with a chain and hitting white women in the head and raping them. And like I said, you may not like my message. But if you say that it's not important today, then why is the president getting threat letters? Why is the president still being threatened? Are we supposed to be the content of the character or the color of his skin? Don't give me that Martin Luther King BS talk about we arrived at his dream. Not when black people are at the bottom of unemployment, not when black people are at the bottom of education, not when Hispanics can't get a fair shake to get in the country, not when the Hispanics have been here before we have been here. This is their country, San Antonio, San Jose, San Francisco, and I can go on. This is their city. This is their land. So why are we upset if they want to come to their own land? Get out of here with that BS. Get out of here. I mean, look at the Native Americans. Not only did the white folks take their land, but they killed them. They killed out hundreds or maybe thousands of tribes that lost their dialect. Do you know that in Wichita, Wichita Falls area, the only woman who was alive is about 94 years old, and she's the only living person from the tribe who could speak the Wichita language. Now, you can't tell me that's sad. When you eradicate a whole different race, I mean, that's like eradicating elephants. But don't kill a dog. Oh, let a white person see a dog get beat up. They sent Michael Vick to jail for that. Oh, man, get out of here. There's more important things. Did Dick Cheney go to jail when he shot that man in the face and he accidentally shot him? Come on, get out of here with that BS. Come on, I'm being real. But they talked about it and took it off the air. But you want to talk about my dick going to jail for fighting dogs? Get the heck out of here. White people put dogs on black people. They use water hoses on them. Now let's talk about the economic part. We come out of the Reconstruction period. We're trying to do what we can. We can't. We don't have money. We don't have property. We don't have this and that. But what happens in Tulsa? These people walk to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to the free West, create a society where they can just prosper, and other people become envious and take it away from them. That's not justice. The Tuskegee syphilis epidemic, the AIDS epidemic, the anthrax epidemic, the swine flu epidemic. People, wake up. Wake up. Wake up. Economically, blacks right now, I don't have figures for you, so I apologize. I won't throw out figures or facts, but I will do this. When it comes to economics, if you are a black person and you make $500,000 or more, it's okay for you to move out where you're from. But any extra money that you may have, please bring it back to where you live, originally where you live. I live in Wichita Falls, and there's a black population here, and all the blacks on the one side, when they make it and they get a good education, they move across the way. It's okay for you to move up in the upper room, but remember, you went to Washington Jackson Elementary. It's your community, and if you're spending money on the other side of the community and you're not putting back in the east side, because everybody's trying to do their part, but that's when we need to go back to the old days. We need to unify. We can't be jealous of one another's success. Be happy. Let's go back to the village mentality. When it took a village to raise a child, but we assimilated. Hey, the tribe said, resistance is futile. Huh? Resistance is futile. Are you going to be born for the rest of your life? Or are you going to fight the resistance? Because Jesus is coming back, y'all. Jesus is coming back, whether you believe in him or not. So, my brothers and sisters in the Tulsa riots, they thought These black people probably knew him, thought they were somebody. At the end of the day, they was nothing but target practice. That is a shame. A shame. The young man, there was a story, said the young man went in the house, put on his uniform, and he stayed at the position of attention in front of his house, proud to be an American, shot in the head, dead. Don't tell me that I'm not an American, because I am an American. My point of view may be a little harsher than some of you people who are naturalisms. And believe in all this hogwash, and I shouldn't call it hogwash because that's what you believe. You've never been discriminated against. You don't know what discrimination is. You don't know what it is. Matter of fact, white people just be black. Let's have a flip flop day. Let's have a national flip flop day where white people become slaves, black people become slave masters. Let's just have a day and see how it feel to be subservient. You ask me, why would we want to regress? Because if you don't experience, okay, when Jesus makes you go through trials and tribulations and you don't know why you're struggling, and you come out that, you are a stronger human being. Because you can look back and say, man, I'm sure in a bad rut, but look at me now. So what I'm saying is, if these people have not experienced racism, I'm not talking about what most white people refer to as reverse racism, because there's no such thing as reverse racism. How can black people be racist when, by definition, racists are white who are racist against other races? Come on, man. That don't even make sense. And believe me, black people can be bigoted. They can be prejudiced. Yeah, I can use words. But they can't be racist. Because if they were racist, they'd be walking around with a noose in their hand, swinging around as they walk around. And you know how gangster we are. If y'all scared, listen, if white people scared, white women scared they're going to get raped or beat up. Are white people afraid of black people or Mexicans and they're going to get cut or stabbed? Let me tell you this. If we had the power and we had nooses and we were just doing like that, you'd be definitely scared. But black people don't walk around like that. We greet you with love and dignity. We even give you that old slave master bow. You know, yes, master, we will learn. I'm not doing it. I've done that for 34 years of my life. I am proud to be a nigger. And listen here, white people, especially these white people in Oregon. I'm talking to y'all. Yes, I'm speaking to y'all. No matter how you use the word nigger, rather use an A-R-E-R, it's still the same word. One might be, you look in the dictionary now and say urban slang, and one might be Latin or Greek, but it's still the same word. So don't think you can get away by saying, listen. If you got a black friend, don't even use the word. Why do you need to use it? So you're cool? Come on, man. We gonna love you no matter what. That C word that they call white people, I don't even use, because it's not offensive to me. My words don't have any type of oppression. You say that word nigger or nigger, that word has been infused with hatred, with death, by living in fire, by drowning, by dragging people in the streets, quartering. If you don't know what quartering is that means they put on the four-year extremity, and then they pull your arms out. I'm trying to make it clear. And the only way I can be clear is to tell you that from the bottom of my heart that I love you. We must seek the Christ Jesus in order to move forward. We have to put old thoughts aside and think of a new society. For those people who voted Republican, I'm going to challenge you. I'm going to challenge you to be black. You and your family to be black and poor for one day. What does that mean? I want you one day to go to a homeless shelter. Don't buy no food. Just go to the homeless shelter. Put on the oldest, raggedest clothes you got, or go to the Salvation Army or whatever, and just hang out for at least 3 or 4 hours. Act like you're homeless and see how people will treat you. Because when you're homeless, you have no clout. You have no economic power. You have no social status. You have no political clout. You have economic, social, or politically, you have no power. And that's what I'm talking about. Let's universify our power as people. Get involved in your city council, because that's where it starts. If something fishy don't make sense to you when they doing this, go to the 4-H, the 4-H-A or the 4-H-B boards that makes decisions, and then the city council vote on them. Okay, you don't understand it. We need to start getting information about those things so public be aware. Also, remember, if you do not know about state taxes, like public taxes or sales tax or private sales tax, you need to look that stuff up. All right. So the next time I see you, you should be sounding off.
This one goes out to my little homie Brandon. Told you, I got you, my man.